Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
That is the sound of Chinese missiles fired into the Taiwan Strait as the fallout from House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's visit to Taiwan escalates. The leaders of Taiwan were happy to see such a high-ranking U.S. official show support for their democracy, but China said today it's cutting off talks with the U.S. on a range of issues from climate change to military relations in retaliation for that visit. Today in Tokyo, Pelosi stood firm against China's response.
We will not allow them to isolate Taiwan. They are not doing our travel schedule.
A reminder on the background here, Beijing sees self-governed Taiwan as part of China and wants it back. The U.S. acknowledges China's position, but it wants a peaceful resolution. And all this is causing big waves around the region where China has been expanding its reach. We're going to talk now with three NPR reporters who cover Asia. John Ruich is in Beijing, Anthony Kuhn in Seoul, and Julie McCarthy covers the Philippines, but she's in the U.S. now. Hello to all three of you.
Hello.
Hi, everybody.
Good to have you, John. Let's start with you. So China fired around a dozen missiles into the sea near Taiwan yesterday. Five reportedly landed in Japan's exclusive economic zone just beyond its territorial waters. Is Beijing just expressing frustration here or ramping up to something even bigger?
Beijing seems to be doing a few things here. First of all, yes, it's expressing, I would say, not just frustration, but all-out anger at Pelosi's visit. She's the most senior U.S. official to set foot in Taiwan in 2.5 decades. The Chinese government calls the drills necessary for the legitimate, you know, safeguarding of territorial sovereignty and integrity. You know, look, China claims Taiwan, but it doesn't rule the place. And by all accounts, it isn't prepared to use force to seize control of Taiwan. And its preference, by the way, is to not to have to do so. So these exercises are part of a series of actions that Beijing's taking to show its unhappiness, to impose costs on those that it feels are responsible. And, you know, as to the question, are they ramping up for a bigger show of force? We don't know. I mean, these military drills are scheduled to end on Sunday. But analysts who watch the region and watch China say that it wouldn't be surprising if there was more to come.
Interesting. So Taiwan recently did some military drills of its own. The U.S. knew that Pelosi's visit was provocative. How big an escalation is all this by China?
I'd say the drills are a calibrated escalation, right? Even though they're big and they're happening on all sides of Taiwan, they're basically encircling the island. So far, they're just in 6 zones that the Chinese government has identified publicly. The real risk is things slipping out of control, right? There are reports, for instance, that Chinese planes and ships have been crossing the median line down the center of the Taiwan Strait. Both sides generally have avoided that in the past, but apparently it's happening fairly regularly during these drills. You know, that could lead to something like a plane getting shot out of the sky, and then you have a very different, much more dangerous ballgame. I spoke to Amanda Hsiao about the situation in general. She watches China with the International Crisis Group in Taipei. She says sort of more broadly, there's this widening abyss of mistrust between Beijing and Washington. You know, it's now imperiling what are these core understandings that have really underpinned relations for decades.
What we're seeing is really an unraveling of those sets of understandings. And so we see that each side thinks that the other is dangerously changing the status quo.
And that's why diplomacy is going to be so important here. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken spoke this morning in Cambodia. Let's hear some of that.
The speaker's visit was peaceful. There is no justification for this extreme, disproportionate, and escalatory military response.
John, any indication that what the U.S. is doing, their response, will cool things off at all?
We don't know if it'll cool things off. That certainly seems to be what they want to do. You know, another thing Blinken said is that America's one China policy hasn't changed, that the U.S. does not support Taiwan independence, and that escalation doesn't help. A bigger picture, you know, after the saber rattling is done, the U.S.-China relationship seems like it's still going to be in a bad place.
Anthony Kuhn, let's bring you into this conversation. You're in South Korea now, but covering Japan's response to all this, Japan's Yonaguni Island, just 67 miles east of Taiwan. Are the Japanese concerned that they might be dragged into all this?
Of course. You know, as you noted, a Chinese missile fell 50 miles from Yonaguni, and 5 more fell in Japan's exclusive economic zone. They see it as a serious threat, and they launched a diplomatic protest. Now, China says the missiles hit their targets. There was no mistake. And so it seems like China could be sending a message to Japan to say that if we have to attack Taiwan, do not get involved, do not come to Taiwan's aid. But increasingly, Japan sees Taiwan as vital to its own national security. They've been beefing up their defenses in the islands near Taiwan. And so if China's intention was to dissuade Japan from getting involved, China's messaging may have actually backfired.
But you know, even the prospect of a war in the region must be especially scary for Japan, because that's a country that spends very little on its own defense. It relies a lot on the United States. Is this changing the debate there?
I think so. I think Russia's invasion of Ukraine and tensions over Taiwan will definitely fuel the Kishida administration's efforts to double defense spending to 2% of GDP, to argue that they need to have offensive military capabilities of their own instead of just relying on the U.S., and most importantly, perhaps, to revise their post-war constitution so that they can mobilize their military to fight overseas, even if Japan is not directly attacked. Now, popular opinion on that last item has been lukewarm, and we will see if this changes that.
Julie McCarthy, I want to ask you about a question about the overall region. What's the concern about this, how this kind of military activity could escalate and how it could be avoided?
Well, the big fear that these Chinese military exercises pose is the danger of miscalculation, a misstep, a mistake. And while U.S. and China relations seem to be entering a new phase of acrimony, a new level, neither side has expressed any desire to go to war. But it has to be said, Tony, that the region has been heating up for a while. The past year, we've seen the navies of the world piling into the South China Sea. The Australians come through. The British came through. And the Americans and the Chinese routinely stage patrols and war games. And the way to avoid war is to revert to the status quo. It's been shaken, and Kishore Mahbubani, a former senior diplomat from Singapore, says that's the way to do this. And this is an especially strained moment.
Right now, the world has got so many important pressing issues to deal with. And the last thing you want is another trouble spot to emerge.
But now that the status quo is rocking, how to fully restore it? That's the question preoccupying Southeast Asia.
Yeah, big question indeed. Let me step away from the military activity and move toward politics. As you look around the region, Julie, which is enormous, are there countries that were glad to see Pelosi's visit take place?
Oh, that's a very good question. You know, across the board, countries in Southeast Asia are careful not to take sides. This is a very savvy, diplomatically sophisticated place. Southeast Asian nations meeting this week in Phnom Penh called for dialogue and de-escalation from the major powers. But, you know, there are experts who influence policymakers who say Nancy Pelosi did nothing reckless. She was doing her job. And they blame China for escalating tension. You know, Tony, I just wanted to mention, I recall in the mid-1990s, cross-strait relations flaring, and a small group of us were flown onto a U.S. aircraft carrier in the Taiwan Strait. And it didn't feel, you know, especially menacing. But this is a different age. China is a different country today. Richer, stronger, confident. And countries of the region just don't want to get between the two big powers.
Right. Anthony, if you look across the region, do you see the United States and China trying to build support in their own ways among their allies to take a side on this?
Yes, I think it's fairly transparent. Now, the U.S. says it's not asking anyone to pick a side, but then you hear it saying for the past several years, they're trying to put together a collection of like-minded democracies. They're certainly not talking about China in there. But in the wake of Pelosi's visit, I think it'll be interesting to see whether U.S. allies start saying, okay, if you want us to join you in these efforts, then don't go poking Beijing in the eye and stoking tensions unnecessarily.
You know, all of this is such high-level diplomacy. It's critical. But John Ruich, I'm curious, what do everyday people in China think about all this? How do they view a potential conflict here?
Check out this audio clip that we took from a video that was posted on social media here in China. That's the sound of a missile being launched. There were Chinese people on the beach actually filming these missiles. And then you hear a man in there saying, liberate Taiwan. You know, online, there's lots of support like this for what's happening. And if anything, actually, there are people that want the government to do more. One guy we spoke to here in Beijing out on the street actually voiced that opinion. So he says that, you know, he was actually disappointed that China didn't do more to actually stop Pelosi from going to Taiwan in the first place, like holding military drills before she arrived or blockading the island. The government, though, of course, has to tread cautiously here.
Final question for you, John. What should we be looking for in the coming weeks to see if there is a lasting effect of the Pelosi visit and China's military flexing its muscle?
Yeah, I think there's no doubt this is a big moment for the region. But these military drills are going to end, right? They're going to end on Sunday. There may be more after them. The steps that Beijing's taken, you know, for instance, cutting off dialogue in certain areas with the U.S., those can be reversed. It'll take time, negotiation. China may be using them for leverage now. Meanwhile, the miscalculation risk is still there. China-U.S. relations remain deeply strained. You know, this is going to have an impact. The question is how deep and how long-lasting it's going to be.
All right. Well, that's NPR's John Ruwitch in Beijing. We also heard from Anthony Kuhn in Seoul and Julie McCarthy here in the U.S. Thanks to all three of you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.